Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Celtics Talk Podcast, coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee is just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. I'm Kyle Draper, joined as always by A. Sherrod Blakely. What's up, Sherrod?
What's up, Kyle Draper?
You good? Bert? You enjoying your off season? Relaxing?
There's always stuff to do. You know that.
Hey, I mean, you ain't up to anything.
I'm in here with you. This is work.
This ain't work, big fella. This vacation.
It's hard.
Anytime
it's hard
you get to hang with
you.
Me, it's a good time,
it's
right?
It's hard working with you.
Hey, man, we got a great show coming up here. We got Austin Ainge, the Celtics Director of Player Personnel. He's going to be joining us on the Celtics Talk Podcast. We also have Chris Haynes of ESPN to all things LeBron and Kyrie. That's coming up in just a little bit. But here we are, the NBA Finals basically wrapping up, looking like it's going to be a sweep. Sherrod, you know, would the Celtics have played – The Warriors a little better than what we're seeing from the Cavs.
Oh, absolutely.
I totally disagree. I'm going to let you state your opinion, go ahead.
Are you ready?
I'm going to wait.
I'm chilling, big fella.
Listen, I'm chilling.
They would have played them better because, frankly, they match up better with Golden State. And that doesn't mean they're better. I think the gap between what the Celtics bring in terms of player personnel is a little bit more similar to what works well, or at least be more competitive against, you know, Golden State. But obviously LeBron James is an elephant always in the room that has a way of just changing everything dramatically. But if you look at the way the Celtics are able to, even without Kyrie, even without Gordon Hayward, I still think that they would have won a game.
You think so?
I think they would have won one game.
You think they would have won out in Golden State?
I think they would have won one of the first three.
Three?
Yeah. They would have won a game at home.
I don't know, because if you look at it, the Cavs actually haven't been playing horrible. You could argue the Cavs should have won two games. And so
if we're going to play that game, you could argue that, you know, Milwaukee should have beat Boston in the first round or Philly should have won.
But they didn't,
though.
Hold on. But we're talking hypotheticals here. You're hypothetically saying the Celtics could win. Mm-hmm. I'm hypothetically saying that the Cavs should have won two games. My thing is, what I'm worried about the Celtics, we saw in a pressure-packed situation, a game seven, they crumbled.
Yeah, they didn't get it.
And done. I don't know if the young boys are ready to do it at that level just yet. That's my concern.
Right. But what you're talking about is a game seven winner take all.
It doesn't elevate in the NBA Finals?
What I'm saying to you is there is a different kind of pressure, whether it's game one, two, or three of the first round, whether it's one, two, three.
And we know they lost 4 out of 5 to Cleveland. 4 out of their last 5. I don't know, man. I think the Warriors just go to a different level, man.
That's the thing about it. This is what Golden State has done so far. They have played well enough to win. They have not played.
And you don't think they could do that against Boston?
I think that Boston would. I think Boston, the way that Boston plays, they would have given them a tougher fight.
I don't know. I actually think it's been a tough fight. That's what I'm telling you. I feel like this series, to me, has been much closer than I even expected it to be honest with you. Do you agree with that or no?
Game one.
Game three?
Game three?
Cavs had the lead up until last four minutes of the game.
Watching that game, I'm feeling at some point, they're just going to look at the clock and say, okay, y'all ready? Because Cleveland, to me, they were playing okay. They weren't playing great basketball.
They weren't playing great.
And the fact that you're at home – playing pretty good basketball and you're winning, and your other team you're playing, they weren't playing great basketball, that they weren't playing horrible either. You just had the feeling that all Golden State needed to do was knock down a couple shots and Cleveland would go into cocoon mode and catch that L.
I don't know about cocoon mode because I don't think that's what happened. I just think, you know, the game, like I expected 10 to 15 point wins for Golden State every game. Like there was no way I thought Cleveland could match up, and they've actually, the game plan, the way they've slowed the game down, I've been impressed with Cleveland, just their
they've
ability
given
to keep
themselves
it close.
A chance to compete better right. than I think a lot of people thought they would. But ultimately, as you start, you know, really breaking down their roster player by player, it's clear that is not a championship caliber / championship contending type team. To me, the thing is this. Let's just say the Celtics got to the NBA Finals this year, okay?
Yep.
Let's say Golden State just absolutely, you know, just wiped them off the map. Beat them 4-0, 4-1, something like that. If, let's say, the Celtics brought their whole crew back the following year, I think the hype would be that they're going to get back there.
I think they're for sure.
Now, Cleveland, Let's say LeBron and this same crew come back as they are next year with the same crew. I don't think people even think they'll get out of the first round. This team is not built to compete. I give Ty Lue, I give LeBron James a ton of credit because those two individuals, more than anyone else, has given this team a chance to compete. I give them mad props for that. But for this team to be as they are now, a year from now, they won't even get out of the first round.
I agree. I
just think the
Celtics couldn't beat Cleveland, but yet we think they can play Golden State.
But you know as well as I do, a lot of that is about matches. Because there are teams.
Let's keep it real. In the playoffs. It's all about LeBron James. It ain't about matchups. It's about LeBron James.
I'm talking about your team.
LeBron James, big fella. That's what it's about. And one team has LeBron and the other team does.
I'm talking about if you're a team in the playoffs getting from one round to the next, it is about matches because, you know, there are certain teams, if you see them in the second round, you can probably get past them. But if you see a team that may be a lower seed but matches up better with you, you might have problems. That's why the Celtics, they weren't a part of Washington.
I just feel like Golden State toys with teams, and when it comes to winning time, they elevate their game higher than anybody else.
But here's the problem that they ran into this year. They did not account for the number of injuries that they had to deal with. And to be candid, they caught some major breaks because they got cats. Well, hear me out now. They caught some major breaks because you got guys like Jordan Bell giving you solid minutes. You couldn't bank it on that. You got JaVale McGee balling like he back in D.C.
I can honestly say
their role players have stepped up.
Caught some breaks.
Absolutely.
This postseason. Cleveland
some teams more than
caught
others.
Some breaks. You know, no Kyrie, no Gordon. Celtics caught some breaks, I feel like. Milwaukee, Philly that's not ready. I mean, if they go through Indiana and then Toronto – Maybe it's a different story. Golden State, no Chris Paul, you know?
Right. All right. They may have won that quicker if Chris Paul stayed healthy.
What are you talking about? Do you know? I know Jason's over there rapping.
It's Sharon's National Best Friends Day, guys.
Sharon's just talking nonsense right now.
Chris Paul, big-time winner. Gets you deep into the playoffs, right? No. This is the time when Chris Paul is either hurt or ineffective.
Unbelievable.
One of the two.
I love some respect on that, man.
I love CP3.
No, don't say you love CP3.
I do.
Don't you just hate it on him.
I keep it real about CP3. He does not play well deep into the playoffs.
Sherrod's still hoping for that CP3 interview. Don't even try it, bro.
Nah. Hey, got it. Had it.
Let's get somebody that's not going to flip-flop on this show. My man Chris Haynes of ESPN. So much LeBron talk lately.
Who?
You know who. LeBron, put some spec on that name also. Let's dial up Chris Haynes of ESPN and
get him
on the
Celtics
jersey
on that name.
All right, Chris, thanks for joining us here on the Celtics Talk podcast. Obviously, you know, everybody's talking about LeBron James and his future. So much talk about whether LeBron is coming to the city of Boston. Stephen A. Smith said he'll have a meeting with the Celtics. Just give us your thoughts because The Ringer put out an article saying that Boston is the best option for LeBron James.
The best option. Wow.
Because, I mean, let me backtrack.
Yes. Hey, Chris, have him clean that up a little bit. I don't think that was quite.
No, the best option is Golden State.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But that's
thank
not
you.
Happening.
Thank you.
That's not happening.
But just, okay. I'm just glad you cleaned that up.
A couple things, but, you know, team as a whole, they have a nice young team, of wing studs. Jaylen Brown, Tatum, those guys. I don't know if you want to mess with that development, but we are talking about LeBron James here. The other conundrum is that guy Kyrie Irving over there. I mean, he got away from LeBron. I don't think he want LeBron following him over there. But Boston, I know this for a fact. Boston, along with teams like Golden State and Houston, those are organizations, San Antonio, those are organizations that LeBron has mad respect for.
Right.
And those teams, if they worked out the a game plan to where they show him that they can acquire him and they can put the necessary moves together. All those organizations that I mentioned have savvy front office gentlemen, and they can pull something together. So if it did get to that point, out of respect, LeBron definitely would, talk to Boston as well. And so I think that's the extent. I don't think it goes any further than that.
Because the one thing that you know, just looking at the whole Boston situation and looking at LeBron and the options that he'll have, I just wonder about, and I think you touched on a little while ago, about that growth of those around him. I mean, LeBron is a great player. I mean, you're not going to find anybody question that. But when you look at the guys, particularly the young guys around him, you don't necessarily see them steadily grow and improve as players. And I'm just wondering, how much is that going to factor into whether LeBron James goes to a team that's already filled with savvy vets, or whether he's open to the idea of maybe being a mentor of sorts to a younger team?
Well, he's open to being a mentor to a younger team if that team has the talent to compete right now for championships. He's not going to take a step back. And if you're talking about young teams who can compete, you know, I think Boston's probably the only team, or them in Philadelphia, those teams right there. So, you know, LeBron is going to have to weigh, do I stay in Cleveland? And if I stay in Cleveland, Is this front office, are they shrewd enough, clever enough to pull off the moves? And Kobe Altman has shown that he can do something. He did something that was quite praiseworthy at the time. Those trades are not looking beneficial now, but they've proven that they can do some things. And but I think LeBron, look, yeah, I said this numerous times. So if LeBron gets swept, then, man, the chances of him resigning, it drops dramatically. It just does. LeBron, a couple of days ago, guys, I don't know if you saw the press conference, he answered a question about how deep Golden State was, and he compared the Golden State starting five with the Cavaliers, and he just said it's a dramatic drop off if you compare the two squads. And he was talking about how you got to have talent, and you got to have smart guys who know how to play. Basically, he's giving teams a blueprint and letting them know, look, this is what you need to have, and this is what you need to have if you're going to think about trying to chase me. Right. And so that's the situation.
The belief is that LeBron hasn't made up his mind, but do you expect him to be in Cleveland next season? Will he give the Cavaliers a fair shot at him coming back?
I think LeBron will give them a fair shot, but I think – look, ultimately, if this series, I think most people feel like if this series is the way it looks like it could end, that leaves a sour taste. LeBron is about trying to win and win now. And if Cleveland, look, the roster as constructed is just not good enough. That's a simple fact. If Cleveland wants to have any chance of retaining them, they're going to have to do a complete overhaul of that roster. So that's just it. That's a simple fact of the matter.
I wanted to ask you something you touched on a little while ago about Kyrie and just him and LeBron working together. Now, if you're the Boston Celtics and you're in a conundrum where you've got to either cut Kyrie loose, bring in LeBron, or keep Kyrie and let LeBron do whatever he's going to do, what would you do, Chris? What should the Celtics do if they're put in that type of situation where Kyrie makes it clear that he doesn't want to play with LeBron anymore? But LeBron, in the case of the Celtics, he wants to play in Boston.
I'll have to ship Kyrie.
Oh, wow.
Dang, is that?
Oh, wow. You know what I love?
You didn't even think
Chris,
about it,
that's,
bro.
And that's what I love about that, Hayes. You did not give that a second of thought.
And guys, the reason I say that, because obviously, you know, playing with LeBron, you don't necessarily need another ball-dominant guard. Hmm. And then Terry Rozier has shown that he can be a formidable force. So that's why I say you make that call, man. Look, LeBron James, we've always thought that he, at some point, his play was going to diminish. It was going to subside.
We still wait.
He was still waiting. He's 33 years old. And, you know, not only are we waiting, guys, you can make the argument that he's gotten better.
Yes.
So if I'm the Celtics, if I'm placing that scenario, I have to think, like, look, Boston is in the East, of course. I bring the best player on board, and he hasn't shown any signs of declining. I have a good three-year window to compete for a championship.
You think LeBron's got three good years left in him?
Man, I wouldn't have said this a couple years ago, but no, I do.
Wow.
I do. I mean, if he starts to decline next year, is he going to decline out of the top spot? I don't know if he's going to fall that bad. You know,
right.
The decline, I just don't know, guys. I mean, he takes care of his body. You guys know.
Yeah.
You know, this takes care of his body extremely well, man. Like, he's defying all the odds.
That's true. And you say trade Kyrie. You know both these guys. You've covered both these guys. Is there any way possible they could coexist? Or has that ship sailed? There's no way Kyrie would want to, you know, play with LeBron again.
That ship has sailed. Dang. On Kyrie's end. No, I'm going to say on Kyrie's end. He got out for a purpose. You know, he got out for a reason. He wanted to be his own man. And so for the Celtics, so he used the Celtics as a way to escape. And that's fine. So if the Celtics go around a year later and say, we're going to acquire the guy that you're trying to get away from, I mean, that lets Kyrie know. Like, who's in charge? Just like who was in charge when they were in Cleveland. Nothing's changed. So I would think Kyrie would ask to be moved himself.
And we know Kyrie ain't scared to ask to be moved if he don't like what's walking through that front door. I wanted to ask you about another team that's been linked with LeBron, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. And obviously, with the Colangelo situation, Twitter, you know, burner accounts and all that stuff playing out as it has, how has that, or how will that affect LeBron's decision as far as whether Philly's even a team to consider? Because, you know, what I keep hearing out there, and you've probably heard similar things about David Griffin, if he just simply, Philly hires David Griffin, that enhances their chances of getting LeBron significantly.
I don't know if it enhances. I don't know if it enhances that much, but Philly is an option. And then, you know, they're going to be an option with Colangelo in, and they'll be an option with whoever is there in the front office. Guys, and I couldn't even tell you why Philly is an option. I really can't. I don't understand it myself. I don't see how or why Ben and LeBron would want to play together.
Other than the connection, I mean the business connection, you know, with Rich.
But I understand that. But the main point should be the connection on the court. Yeah. Will they be a positive connection? I don't know, guys. That has always kind of baffled me, but. It is a legitimate option.
I'm just trying to think of the last time LeBron played with a point guard who could not shoot. And when I say cannot shoot, I don't mean he doesn't really shoot the ball. No, Ben does not shoot outside the paint. Yeah. Yeah. I struggle with understanding how LeBron is going to be able to do LeBron like this. When you play with a cat, you're playing 4-on-5 in terms of knocking down shots every time you're on the floor with him.
But I'm going to tell you this. This is no secret. If LeBron James is on Philly, there's a new point guard in town.
Uh-oh.
So, I don't know how.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's just, you know, that LeBron handles the ball. That's it.
And he
LeBron
should.
LeBron handles the ball. And, no doubt. You got him, you got to tap into all of his strengths. And that's part of his strength, ball handling and playmaking ability. You got to give him the reins. But it's, guys, look, I mean, look, I don't like it. I hope it doesn't happen because I just don't know if that's, I just don't know if it would be a good mesh. But it is valid.
I think you need multiple ball handlers too, though. You don't, you know. And
it would help if they could make a shot.
No,
too,
but
though.
Hey, I tell you what, it would help LeBron right now if he had Ben Simmons on Cleveland. The problem now is LeBron's the only one that can initiate Cleveland's offense that could set up other guys. I think, you know, the Ben Simmons thing. Can you imagine, you know, if you play a motion offense or something like that where you got both these guys coming downhill, how do you guard that? I just think that, you know, I understand the shooting aspect of it and everything like that, but, hey, he plays with Tristan Thompson. Tristan Thompson can't shoot.
But Tristan Thompson can dunk.
And Ben Simmons can't.
You can't compare them to. Tristan is a physical inside the paint cat. Your boy Simmons is trying to beat guys off the dribble and back guys up and do everything that guards don't do.
I know one thing that Brad Stevens loves, multiple ball handlers.
Who can make shots.
Who can
make
run
sure
pick
you add
and
that addendum
multiple
that statement. Can
guys
make
who
shots.
Can run pick and rolls. I think it would work. Chris, I want to go back to Kyrie, though, because you got to cover him. How long do you think – what's his commitment to Boston in your eyes? Because you are around in Cleveland. You know, Chris Mannixan, you know, he's mentioned it to those in the Cavs organization about perhaps one day wanting to play for the Knicks. Did you hear any of that back then? And how committed do you think he is to Boston?
Well, when news got out that he requested a trade, I believe the same day reported that he gave the Cavaliers a list of teams. And I can't remember the teams. You can go back and find them. But The Knicks were one of them.
And I thought you were crazy at the time. I'm like, why do you want to go to that dog franchise?
Yeah. Well, yeah, remember his dad.
He's from Jersey, from right?
Area. Yeah, from Jersey.
Right.
The Knicks were one. I think Miami was one. San Antonio.
Yep.
I believe it was five.
I
put out.
I think Denver. I can't remember. Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Denver. I can't remember that. But no, the Knicks are legit. I haven't been around Kyrie as much, obviously, the last year and a half. So I wouldn't want to make up something and say what his commitment is to Boston. But it's tough if you're a competitor and you're considered, he considers himself the best point guard in the league, regardless of whatever you think. He considers himself that. It has to be tough to watch your team just thrive without you. And so I don't know if that would have any – I don't know if that would play any factor in deciding his long-term future with the Celtics. I don't remember reading a lot of stories of people saying the team is better off without Kyrie. I think if those were out, I probably think that would have irritated him a little bit more. But, I don't know. I would – knowing him, I would think, he's similar to LeBron. He's going to make a decision when it's time. I don't know if he's even thought that far yet.
Yeah, when Terry Rozier had it rolling, you had some blogger bugheads out there talking about, trade Kyrie, we got Terry Rozier. Then Game 7 rolled up, and they're like, never mind.
Well, let me tell you this, and that's funny. That's funny you guys mentioned that. So, I'm watching the playoffs, obviously, watching Boston and Terry Rozier doing their thing. And Terry Rozier is balling, proud of him. I didn't think he had that in him.
Yeah.
And I saw fans saying that stuff, but I'm like, damn, y'all really forgot how bad that boy Kyrie is. Like, y'all forgot.
They forget quickly, right? Too. I mean, they didn't even let it last, an entire season. I understand forgetting Isaiah Thomas because you got Kyrie, but dang.
Man.
I mean, all he did was 24-5-5 in like what 30 minutes? I mean, he didn't even play like superstar minutes.
No, and he did. I mean, and how hurt was he throughout the season? Like,
right.
I don't think he was himself all year, and so like Kyrie's a bad boy, man. Like he's not the easiest to cover, but you can't deny his talent, man. Like Rozier was doing his thing. I was proud of him. Like go out there and get some money, setting yourself up for future earnings, but. Terrell, you ain't no Kyrie, man.
Ain't no Kyrie yet, no doubt. All right, Chris Haynes of ESPN joining us on the Celtics Talk podcast. Chris, hope you're enjoying the finals, man. And we got to get you back on again soon as we get ready for next season here in Boston.
Oh, anytime, guys. You already know. You guys got the numbers.
All right, thanks, Chris, for coming on the Celtics Talk podcast again. Now let's dive into the Celtics offseason plans. The draft is coming up. Also, Jason Tatum, great rookie here. Sherrod, I know you had a chance to talk to Austin Ainge, the director of player personnel.
We are here with Austin Ainge, director of player personnel for the Boston Celtics. Austin, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, let's just jump right into it. The draft is going to be here. I think we're less than 2 weeks away. Just what are your general thoughts on how this draft class is shaping up? What do you like? What seems pretty standard with this group? Just your general thoughts on it.
I would say it's a pretty deep group with bigs, right? A lot of bigs in this draft, which is unusual. And a lot of good players. I think we can get a guy who's pretty good at 27. We're excited about some of the guys.
And as you go through this draft process, the one thing that certainly for Celtics fans, they're like, man, there's been a lot of talk about this being a very top-heavy class, particularly with bigs. And this is the first time in a while where we've seen the Celtics without a lottery pick. How does that affect or impact the way you guys go about your whole draft process?
Yeah, I mean, we have to be ready for everybody. You get in the clock in the draft room and you've got trades coming in at all times and you have to be ready for everybody. So obviously we're evaluating all year. I mean, it wasn't too long ago till we had a chance at the Lakers pick in the lottery.
Yeah.
Right. So we did a lot of work, at the top of the draft guys, just in case we got that pick. Since then we've obviously kind of narrowed the pool down and focused a little more on, on the group that will be there at 27.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have had, you know, I mean, thinking back to last year, Semi Ojeleye, a guy that you're able to take in the second round, who not only for a second round pick made your roster, but he actually wound up starting for you guys at times during the playoffs. What's the key to finding that diamond in the rough, late first round, early second round pick that can really help a team, particularly a team like yours that already has a lot of, you know, areas already addressed?
Yeah, I mean, you're just trying to do the best you can. There's always going to be guys that you like, and you're just not going to, they're not going to be perfect the later you go in the draft. They're going to have some holes. And so you try to find the strengths that your coach can use on your roster. But, you know, as much as finding diamonds is great, I'd really prefer, Sherrod, if we could get our best players healthy and play them.
Yeah, that, you know, that's another thing that when people look back at this season, and the further away we get from this past season, the more people's memory is going to be foggy. But you guys relied a lot on young guys that they're not supposed to win, Austin. They're not supposed to help your team win at the levels that you guys were able to, and yet your young guys were able to do that. Was there something that you saw in the draft process that made you believe that, you know, a Jason Tatum or a Semi Ojeleye, you know, guys like that could really make a difference right from the jump? Meaning, and by jump, I mean this first season for them in the league.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are just – tough guys, and they're winners, and we're really proud of them. They stepped up through adversity, and they did so much. And it, you know, obviously, it always helps to have Kyrie and Al to carry them through a lot of the year and help them out. And guys like Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart that have been around, you know, just help them. But I mean, those guys, you just got to give them credit for stepping up and working hard and preparing.
Yeah, and when you look at some of your young guys that maybe didn't see a ton of minutes, a guy like Gershon and guys that people really didn't know about, like a Daniel Tice, just what do you see their futures as far as the ceiling as a player in this league? Because both of those guys, young fellas, saw their first real taste of the NBA this season and at different times did some good things for you.
Yeah, no, I mean, we like both those guys. Daniel was amazing for us defensively this year. His versatility was something we really appreciated in his game. He can guard multiple positions. He can switch a little bit. And his athleticism at the rim helps block shots, finishes. And then Gershon is, you know, very strong, very mobile. He's actually a very good passer. His shooting keeps getting better every year. So those guys have very interesting skill sets for bigs. And it's what, you know, we're always trying to find guys. We'll see how the minutes shake out this year, but I wouldn't bet against either of them.
Yeah, and it seems that you guys have what I think most people would I think universally agree is a good problem. You've got lots of guys who've shown different types of skill sets and abilities, who've shown at times that they can help you win, and now it becomes a matter of piecing all that together, getting rotations and lineups and all that stuff that can be effective. How challenging is that for you from a front office perspective to try and add on to what is becoming a good problem for you guys, where you've got a lot of guys that can play?
Yeah, no, take this year, right? I mean, you never know when injuries are going to happen, and you need depth. And as the playoffs go along, you never know which matchups are going to hurt you, right? I mean, it's you've got to have sometimes one of your bench players can be amazing and a first round series, and then the other guy on the bench is a better fit for the second round series, right? There's so many matchups in the playoffs that can sway things. So you got to have depth. But you know, at the same time, we're going to need guys to sacrifice and buy in to win. There's just, you can't win a championship without guys sacrificing. It's never happened, and you need it to happen.
And I guess the thing that surprises me about that, Austin, is that I get it when you've been in the league for 4, 5, 6 years and your team has never gotten out of the first round or second round of playoffs. That sacrifice, it makes sense why you would be so quick to buy into that. But you've got guys who are coming into the league, no real NBA resume to speak of because they haven't had a chance to play yet. And when you watch them play, it's clear that there's things that they've sacrificed for what's best for the team. I think about Jason Tatum and what he did in the playoffs. Very different type of player we saw in the regular season. How do you get guys to buy into that, to be selfless in terms of what they can do on the floor.
Yeah, those guys all want to win, and they all want to. They're all pulling in the same direction, and obviously the coaching staff does a great job with that. But I really think that, you know, the example of Al Horford, when you know he only cares about winning. And Kyrie came, and that's the first thing he said is that he wants to win, and he wants to be a leader. And when your best players are sacrificing to win, then I think it's hard for the young guys not to follow suit.
Yeah, absolutely. And want to also just piggybacking off of Jason Tatum. I mean, he obviously had a great regular season, stepped it up even more so in the playoffs. Well, you know, one of the top rookies in the NBA, had one of the greatest playoff runs by a rookie ever. What's the next level for that guy? What can we realistically expect him to do for an encore after this season?
Yeah, I don't know. I just hope he's going to continue to work hard and improve his game and his body, and the game will slow down for him even more as the years go along. We just need him to help us win a championship, and that's the goal. That's the goal that we all need to have. Find ways to win within our team structure and make everybody better and put the best units we can out there.
Yeah, and I know it's tradition where, you know, your second-year players, they play a second-year summer league, but is he really going to be out there in Vegas playing in games, Coach Austin?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay, Celtics Nation breathes a sigh of relief with that, Austin. Thank you.
too many games and minutes this year for that.
Now, the last few summers, Austin, have been pretty wild as far as moves, trades, and signings and all that. You guys have been very much in that storm. What do you anticipate this summer will be like throughout the NBA landscape? It seems like it's not going to be quite as eventful as past summers, but just your general thoughts on that at this point.
You know, I don't know. I mean, you never know. There's lots of big time free agents this summer. I don't expect it to be crazy for us though. And that's really what I focus on. Mm-hmm. Obviously we really like our team and we have a lot of guys under contract. We do have some key free agents, that we need to, negotiate with and all that from our own team. But as far as the league goes, there are some pretty big names that whose contracts are up. It'll be interesting to see what happens with all of it.
Yeah. And Austin, just from afar, I mean, and when you hear the Celtics being thrown in with, hey, the Celtics, maybe they should go after, you know, this guy who just happens to be one of the greatest players of all time. What are your thoughts on when you hear that stuff? Even though you guys have – obviously, you haven't put that out there, but when you hear your name attached with a LeBron James or players like that, what are your initial thoughts when you first see that stuff out there?
I feel like the last 3 years, as we've – kind of had these high draft picks and cap space and people recognizing what a good job Coach Stevens does. I think that we've been linked with so many good players in trade talks, in free agency talks, in drafting. You know, we've just been linked to a lot of them, and we've been close and on some, we've missed on some, but we've been able to get some, and I think it's just flattering that that a lot of the top stars want to play in Boston and want to play for Brad and think we have a chance to win. It's been great through all of our, you know, from Al Horford and Kevin Durant that year to, you know, then Gordon the next year, and obviously being able to trade for Kyrie. It's fun that these guys are excited to play and they think we have a chance.
Absolutely. I mean, got a chance this year. And Austin, as you know, we'll probably be having these same conversations a year from now when you get that pick from Sacramento, which, knock on wood, is probably going to be a pretty good one. Austin Ainge, Director of Player Personnel for the Boston Celtics, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated, my friend.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Okay, talk to you soon. Take care.
All right, Austin Ainge on the Celtics Talk podcast. Shout out to him. Good stuff from him. The draft is coming up in what? A couple weeks, dude. We're talking 2 weeks or so. Less than 2 weeks now. Looking forward to that. Make sure you subscribe to Anything is Potable. That's right.
Nice.
It's our new podcast on the 2008 Celtics. It's coming later this summer. It's going to be great. We got stories from Scal, plus that great 2008 championship team. You want to check it out. Anything is Potable. That'll do it for this week's episode of the Celtics Talk podcast. Thanks again to Chris Haynes and Austin Ainge for jumping on. For A'ja Rod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time.
We out!